Hello and welcome to Zero Hour. This is Tim Bowery. Today's show is an ongoing series that explores Richmond's thriving arts scene and the people that make it happen. Every Friday at 12:30, we sit down at Richmond Cafe and have lunch with one of these folks. Conversation is live and spontaneous, so pull up a chair and meet some fascinating people. Today we are talking to Daryl Harper. Daryl began playing the clarinet at the ripe age of 6 in a Settlement House music school in his native Philadelphia. Daryl has performed and lectured nationally and internationally at places including the Walden School, Williams College, Princeton University, and the Australian National University, just to name a few. His performing credits include collaborations with some of the major emerging and established artists in the field. He has opened concerts for Dr. Billy Taylor and Wynton Marsalis. And Daryl is currently, as if he didn't have enough to do, currently pursuing a doctorate in musical arts degree at the New England Conservatory in Boston. Welcome to Zero Hour, Daryl. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Tim. Thanks for having me.
Actually, thanks for fitting us in. I guess the first thing I will often ask people about their arts. Did music pick you, or did you pick music?
I would have to say it picked me. Uh-huh. The first thing I remember is taking up the clarinet.
Really?
When I was a second grader, and I was going to public school, so it had a big band program, and had this teacher named Deborah Fitzgerald, who probably was 23 or 24 years old at
but
the time.
Seemed really old
yeah,
at the
which
time
seemed right?
Right. It's like ancient,
right.
Man.
And she was amazing. I remember, yeah. You know, she was teaching all these different instruments, and uh-huh. I had one of my closest friends at the time, he wanted to study trombone,
right,
but the school didn't have any trombones, so she gave him a bassoon instead, and he did that for a little while.
Funny how that works. So clarinet, though. I mean, yeah. I don't want to, you know, this is, you could get up and punch me if you want, but I mean, I don't, you know, isn't that kind of a sissy kind of instrument?
Well, it's funny. I mean, it's one of those instruments that kind of went in both directions. I mean, uh-huh. There were a lot of boys who played. There were a lot of girls who played.
Right.
And the reason that I started doing it is... We had a family friend, and my mother, who still is a social worker, uh-huh. She had this mentor named Catherine Moody, and I used to come to my mom's job after school, and I was a pretty good kid, but you know, mm-hmm. I'd get bored after a while and start getting
right.
into things, and I think Miss Moody said, I think Daryl would really enjoy, you know, learning an instrument, and I have this clarinet. And so she gave it to me as a present, and that's how I got started on
so
it.
So some of it was just serendipitous.
Yeah.
As life often is, isn't it?
Absolutely.
It really is. Yeah. That's great. Yeah, no, I didn't mean to insult you by sissy, but I mean, you know, it's kind of like, you know, when you're a kid, that's what I'm talking about. I'm certainly not talking about as an adult, but when you're a kid, it's like, you know, you play the trumpet or you play the drums or you play the...
Well, there was definitely...
But you don't play the flute if you're a guy.
Was hard. The guys who took up flute eventually, you know, by high school, middle school, they had a hard time.
Yeah.
But clarinet, you know,
clarinet's always kind of cool, I guess, really.
Well, there's sort of
some
of the
cool
top
factor.
Players in the city were boys, and some were girls.
Yeah.
So
there
wasn't any stigma attached that I knew. But
jazz.
Yeah.
Is that always been for you?
No.
That's
another great story. I came upon this teacher when I was 16 years old,
mm-hmm.
Named Tony Hurdle, and kind of a fluke, actually, the way we met, but he is the one who kind of opened my ears to jazz and took me out to some sessions and got me started playing, gave me lessons and that kind of thing.
So you'd heard jazz before, obviously.
Yeah, a little bit, but not
a little bit.
Not with any
what interest made it click
or
for
focus
you. Yeah, what made
it was this one time Tony was teaching at the high school, and we had this one of those horrid kind of Christmas concerts in the mall where you sit there and play Christmas carols for 3 hours. And And, you know,
by the way, we have a lot of Muslim listeners who I think will understand exactly what you're saying. So go ahead.
Well, afterwards, we were standing around and Tony asked me if I would be interested in hearing some music. So I said, sure. You know, I didn't have anything to do. It was the afternoon. School was out for the semester. And he took me to this little club called Slim Cooper's. And there was a quartet playing, a guy named Tony Williams on alto saxophone. It was his quartet. And that was the moment for me when I heard them and I saw them. I just said, you know, that's what I want to do.
That's it. Yeah. Because I was going to say, you know, was there a moment when you decided that this is how you're going to?
Really? That was it.
That's amazing. Okay. So from then on, it was pretty much committed to and playing jazz and listening to jazz and collecting jazz and learning as much as you could about it. Jazz, as I understand it, and I'm certainly no expert, to say the least, but jazz certainly was big in the 20s, the 30s, I guess even into the 40s and the 50s. And then, of course, rock and roll came along, and it seemed to sort of dissipate, disappear. Sales dropped off. Interest dropped off. I was reading somewhere a year ago or so, New York Times or something, where apparently there's a resurgence of jazz. Am I hallucinating here? Tell us.
No.
Where is jazz right now as far as...
You know, it definitely peaked in the 30s into the 40s. 40s, really, was when it was most popular, and you had all these big bands touring around the country, and that was probably the last time it was, you know, the most popular music. You know, now it's a very small percentage of the record industry.
Is it really?
For example,
it's
maybe about 3% of the record industry, but I think in the 70s in particular, there were a lot of people worried and a lot of kind of pessimism. There was a lot of pessimism about
jazz dead,
dying, you know, that kind of thing. And that has certainly turned around. I mean, you don't find that kind of pessimism.
What do you think turned it around?
Well, a lot of it had
guys
to do
like
with,
you, right?
Well, I hope so. But certainly, Wynton Marsalis, you know, his career kind of came on the rise, and he became really the top ambassador for jazz, and in conjunction with institutions like Lincoln Center Jazz Orchestra, which he directs, and say International Association for Jazz Education. There have been these huge kind of synergies where institutions have come together to start a really big educational campaign. So you find very strong jazz programs in schools now.
You picked it up in school, right?
I did.
But it seems like the first thing schools tend to cut are music programs.
Yeah,
programs.
Well, that's always true, too. Yeah. The arts programs are vulnerable when their budget cuts. But as far as jazz in particular, it's a pretty strong force now in schools. And a lot of that has to do with this jazz education movement that has really taken hold.
Yeah, I guess the article I was reading about a year ago was about young people.
Really
getting interested in jazz.
Absolutely.
How do I put this? I guess just straightforward. So why is jazz important? I mean, why should anybody care? You know, so what? Jazz dies.
Right.
You know, I mean, other than the fact that you don't have a job anymore.
Right.
But. I mean, for our culture, and
no,
I know
that's a
tough question.
It's absolutely fair. I think, you know, for one thing, jazz is one of the few indigenous art forms to this country as far as, you know, when we think about things that are part of American culture. You know, this is a form of music that was created here and developed here, and you know, that's why it was also named as a national treasure, you know, by
It was named as a national treasure?
I may not have the wording correct.
No, but that's okay.
But there was a House Resolution 57.
Oh, really? Interesting.
Set jazz aside as, you know, this is something that the country cares about preserving, and, you know, we're going to make an effort to preserve
it. I didn't know that.
It's
great.
So, you know, certainly historically it's important. I think jazz and any art form, for that matter, is important because it, you know, it helps us really expand our imaginations.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's an important tool, you know, say when you're in the context of education, like we were talking about, really flexing those muscles is going to be important, not only if you become a musician and you're improvising on the stage or that kind of thing, but also if you become a biologist, or you become a politician, or you become a doctor, or you become a lawyer. Imagination is a great tool to have for anyone in any profession. And I personally believe that the skills that you learn in an artistic discipline are things that, you know, you learn things that translate to your other.
I heard a wonderful thing. They were interviewing a guy, I guess, who's become poet laureate for the United States. I think that's who it was. Mm-hmm. And he was teaching a class, and somebody said, "So why is poetry important?" Right. And he sort of sat there for a minute, and this young woman put up her hand, and she said, "Well, I think because it reminds us of our humanity. It reminds us that our lives are limited. It makes us think about things like, is there a God? Isn't there a God? It makes us think about things like, what is the point of it all? What's the point of my life? Where am I? What am I doing?" Does that resonate with you at all in terms
absolutely.
Of music?
Absolutely.
Yeah. I thought that was really sort of a beautiful thing.
No, definitely.
You know, that there's that whole, it is that the arts really are about reminding us about our humanity.
Yeah.
You know?
There's one quote that I like about, you know, the artist's job isn't to peer into the past or see into the future so much, but the thing that artists are really good at is seeing the present and kind of reflecting that back to us.
Right.
And
which is the hardest thing to see.
How
do you step away from the, you know, the trees in the forest?
Yeah.
Well, let's talk about you a little bit in terms of, you know, when you're playing, when you're making music, what's that process like for you? Because I always wonder, you know, I mean, I played drums a lot when I was a kid.
Mm-hmm.
Don't play so much anymore. But for me, and for a lot of artists I've talked to, time stops.
Sure, yeah.
Whatever that means. I'm not sure what that, but it seems to be really important to us, you know, to stop time, to stop self-consciousness, to stop, you know, all that, whatever is the opposite of what that is.
Yeah.
Does that, what, tell me about that process for you. What's that like for you?
That definitely happens. I think, you know, for me in terms of a day-to-day process, I put a lot of time into these kinds of technical issues,
of course,
you know, just practicing.
Right. I didn't mean to say that playing music is like this la-di-da kind of time stop thing.
No.
Talk about that other part, though. Talk about the hard work. That's important.
That's something that is necessary for me, at least.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure it's necessarily necessary for all musicians, but just to keep myself in shape, you know, the way
just
an athlete does.
The hard work, the practice, the discipline,
But my practice really has two main parts to it, and one is, you know, running the scales and, you know, doing all that kind of stuff.
After all these years.
Right.
You're still running the scales.
And and then the other part is really conceptual, where I'm trying to develop new ideas and new ways of getting into a piece. So, and that's probably the part that most people think about when they imagine, you know, what a musician is thinking about. And I really enjoy that part. I mean,
but you're not thinking verbally, you're thinking musically, right?
Well, I think pretty literally while I'm developing a practice routine.
Right. Uh-huh.
And And then the idea is to get it to a point where I don't have to think about it.
Isn't that interesting? Where I don't have to think.
Right.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
Because, you know, so, people talk about that in terms of making art.
Yeah.
It's sort of getting out of your own way, getting out of...
Absolutely.
Stopping thinking.
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely.
And whatever.
And so when I'm on stage, I'm not... There's no thinking.
There's no thinking.
Yeah, it's a different process.
So wonderful. Yeah. There's no thinking in terms of what we think of in this culture, which I guess would really be language-based
right.
thinking.
Right, right.
That's really... Right. And that's one very limited kind of thinking, but it is a kind of thinking that, you know, if you're well-spoken, people listen to you. Mm-hmm. Doesn't matter how smart or dumb you are. Mm-hmm. If you're well-spoken, people will listen to you. If you're not well-spoken, people immediately assume you're not very smart.
Sure.
So that's kind of the intellectual coin, you know, that we use in our culture. But obviously that doesn't translate always when you're making art, especially when you're really involved in the process as opposed to the discipline.
It's really, you know, all the research from the 60s about the
left brain, right brain,
or the brain and that kind of thing.
Yeah,
you
right.
know, that certainly applies, and I think that
personally, I think there are many more than two hemispheres, but that's just
well,
my
now
own theory.
That's, what,
that's just
what
my
people,
own theory.
No, that's true.
Oh, really?
That's been
I was like, are you kidding? Two hemispheres?
No, now they're talking about, you know, multiple intelligences.
Yeah, exactly.
And, you know, all that kind
sure,
of thing.
Yeah.
But,
right.
But it's definitely a different way of processing that you work toward and you try to get out of that logical,
whatever that, yeah,
literal part of your thinking.
Yeah. You know? Yeah, interesting. It's very interesting. Sort of non, well, I guess it, you know, it's called nonverbal,
yeah,
you know, reasoning and thinking, but anyway. Well, let's talk a little bit about your band.
Sure.
And I believe it's the Onus.
Mm-hmm.
What is this? Does that have a meaning or
yeah,
sounds ominous?
No, it's not ominous.
Okay.
At all. When I was getting out of graduate school about 10 years ago, this was the first band that I started with the intention of keeping it working and keeping the same personnel in it and keeping a body of compositions that we would perform regularly, you know, original music that I was writing.
Why the interest in that? So that there could be a progression, so there could be a growth.
What I had done up to that point was, you know, one of the things that I think is part of the kind of romantic glamour of
yeah.
a jazz musician
right.
is that we can come together and we have this common repertoire of pieces that we could just call out and we could just start improvising. And that's true. And that's an important part of playing. But I really wanted to kind of step it up a notch at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And so that moniker for the group had to do with taking that responsibility on of, you know,
okay, so Onus as a responsibility.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay,
exactly.
Interesting. Interesting. Because you've produced an album, and help me if I'm mispronouncing this, but it's called The Triphony.
Triphony?
Yes, mm-hmm. in 2005, that received honorable mention at the Village Voice Jazz Consumer Guide. As a matter of fact, Tom Hall, who writes for the Village Voice, said, Daryl Harper's clarinet trio is a marvel of studied moderation, searching but not rushed, long but not weary. What is that man talking about?
Well, this album, you know, this was our fourth album,
mm-hmm.
and it was the most experimental thing that we had recorded. And Triphony is actually the album that three of us from the original quintet, the Onus started as a quintet, and three of us, the drummer, the bass player, and I, kind of split off, and originally for practical reasons, we were playing this room that wasn't big enough for the whole quintet. So we had to figure out how to, you know, how to adapt
story.
To that.
And, okay, one less.
Right. So we tried a bunch of different combinations, and that one sort of stuck. And then as we played there over the years, we started developing our own repertoire. And one of the things that we developed was a way of getting up on the bandstand and starting to improvise without any kind of skeleton or out. No one called a piece.
Really?
No one knew what the other person was going to do.
Really?
We just started playing and listening to each other and reacting to each other.
Right.
So it was very exciting, very risky. Didn't always work out.
Right. Yeah.
but
cacophony comes to mind.
Yeah, sometimes. but as we got used to doing that and we got used to each other, we started to feel really comfortable and get really excited about that way of making music.
Right.
So this album, Triphony, we tried to reproduce that that phenomenon. So we went into the studio, and instead of going in isolation booths where, you know, I was in one room and the drummer was in another room, that kind of thing, we all were right in the middle of the floor.
Mm-hmm.
And we started playing just like we did in these concerts. And we ended up with a lot of material,
mm-hmm.
you know, much more than mm-hmm. we usually would do in a recording session. And when we were editing the material, we settled on just about the maximum that could fit on a CD.
Right.
And it, again, it was a risk because, you know, that's a lot for somebody to sit through. And fortunately, we got some good critical response, like the Tom Hall review was really, really nice. So so we were really happy with it. We also, that album charted on CMJ. It was, mm-hmm. I don't know, maybe 8 or 10 weeks or so it was
great.
Charting. So it was really great.
It is interesting, though, when you think about it, that how much discipline and practice it takes to be free.
Yeah.
You know?
No,
I mean,
absolutely.
It's, you know, you know, a lot of kids come into art school or whatever, and they're free, and you're thinking, oh, man, have I got some bad news for you.
No, it requires a lot of respect, a lot of listening, a lot of
learning,
a lot of
discipline practice. You know, it takes a lot to be able to let it all go.
Yeah.
I mean, it's funny. It is ironic.
It's a paradox,
Yeah, it's a sort of oxymoronic. No, that's not right. I didn't say that. Oxymoron. okay. What's going on in jazz in Richmond? And what brought you here? I mean, what's a talented guy like you doing?
No, I actually came here to join my wife, who's running the craft program at VCU.
Who was actually on this show last week.
Yes.
It's All in the Family. Maybe I'll change the show name to that. It's probably a certain overtones we don't want to get into, but so go ahead. Sonia Clark.
Sonia Clark.
A very talented artist.
Yes.
And also chair of a department down at the Virginia Commonwealth University at School of the Arts. Yes.
And we, you know, we've spent really the better part of our marriage moving all over different parts of the country,
mm-hmm.
and you know, this was really something I was looking forward to, where we could be in one place. And I'm you know, my work right now is such that I'm pretty flexible as far as where I am, and I was happy to come to Richmond. And
so your work requires you to go travel and record and play in different places.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. So you're not.
Yeah.
You know,
as long
okay,
as there's
Richmond.
An airport, I'm good.
You said you had some friends coming into play that you're going to listen to.
Yeah.
Who's coming in?
Alvester Garnett, who's a VCU alum actually, and he plays in Regina Carter's band with me. And,
oh, really?
That's right.
Okay.
So he...
Regina Carter.
Regina Carter's Violence.
Violence,
yes.
Right? Yes. Oh,
yeah.
Okay, right, yeah.
So he's coming in to do a benefit concert with the VCU Jazz program. And then I have another friend, Russell Kirk, who's playing over at Bogart's tonight.
Oh, really?
And
so we got some, we really have some very interesting talent coming in this town these days.
Yeah, no, it's
yeah, music a, scene. What's the music scene like here? Is it?
I think it's great from what I've seen so far.
Yeah.
I mean, I've had to say I'm still very new here.
Mm-hmm.
I'm still getting to know it.
Mm-hmm.
But the people that I've met so far, and you know, from what I've seen and heard so far, I'm really impressed. So
what's it like playing with famous people like Regina? I mean, most people, I guess, maybe don't know her, but like Billy Taylor. I mean, is that an intimidating experience? Is that a... Well, I mean, you're still a pretty young guy, you know.
Well, I don't know about that. But
by the way, ladies and gentlemen, he's 17 years old. Yeah. He got married when he was 12. It's a strange story. We won't go into it. But.
Regina is wonderful. She's a wonderful musician. Mm-hmm. She's a wonderful boss. She's wonderful to tour with. I mean,
she's a great talent. Yeah.
She's really amazing. Mm-hmm. And, you know, not at all intimidating. I mean, I don't think any of these people, for the most part, go out of their way to give you a hard time. I mean, I know,
but I mean, isn't it a thrill for you?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, some of these.
I mean, the first time that clarinet
heroes,
hit your lips, you probably weren't thinking about playing with Billy Taylor.
No, absolutely. Heroes that you grow up just dreaming about and listening to their records, and then to actually meet them, let alone get to share the stage with them, is really amazing. So, that was a big honor when I got to meet Billy Taylor the first time, and Regina also.
I think I know the answer to this question, but what keeps you going? I mean, I'm could be wrong, but I'm assuming you're not getting rich and famous overnight.
No.
that was just a guess, being in the arts. What keeps you going?
Yeah, well, I love the music. I love the community.
Mm-hmm. It's a fit.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think we have brought up education a few times, mm-hmm. and you know, that's something that's also been really important to me. I've spent a lot of my career teaching.
Mm-hmm.
I like being around schools and students who are excited about what they're doing, and
what do you say to them?
Being part of that process.
But, I mean, is there some one kind of thing you're trying to get across to them? If you come across someone and you go, are there some students you just look at and go, this one might have it?
You know, as far as students wanting to go into music, I mean, that, when you run across a student who's gifted in that way and inspired to do music, you know, that's always a pleasure, but that's actually pretty easy for teachers. I mean, that's a joy. But I wouldn't say that's where the challenge is.
Yeah.
You know, for me, what I have been trying to do as a teacher is really try to find ways of engaging students, mm-hmm. and getting them excited about you know, just what's around them, and, mm-hmm. and trying to engage the curiosity somehow.
So are you playing anywhere nearby? Do you have a website?
I have a website.
What's your website?
DarylHarperJazz.com.
So DarrylHarper.
Yep, HarperJazz.com.
HarperJazz.com. DarylHarperJazz.com.
And we're playing all over the place.
How are you?
The next month or so we'll be in Houston, we'll be in Europe, we'll be in North Carolina.
So you guys are all over.
We'll be all over. Right. We'll be in Richmond in the spring with Regina's band in April, beginning of April sometime.
Okay. Well, guess what? We're out of time.
All right.
It zooms by. Thank you so much, Daryl, for coming in. This has really been fascinating. Yeah, I really appreciate it. Yeah, no problem. Thank you, folks, for listening. We hope to see you again here on the radio next Friday at 12:30. And again, this is Tim Bowring, and you're listening to WRIR 97.3 FM. It's Richmond's Indie Radio. It's radio for the rest of us.